Hey, Curiosity Builders, I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. What instantly enters your mind when you hear the phrase slacking off? How about slacking off for fun and profit? If you're anything like myself and many others, guilt, shame, laziness are right there, not to mention bonbons. Mike Arnold, the author of Slacking Off, A Successful Way to Work from Home, is today's guest on Getting Work to Work, and he wants you to know that slacking off is a good thing for us. Not only does it boost our creativity, but it also increases our productivity. In this conversation, we talk about his entrepreneurial journey and relationship with working and slacking off, the importance of learning from failures, not just successes, why self-love matters, and the best gift he gives his reader, more time. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/537. Mike, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is absolutely wonderful to talk with you today.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I love to ask this question of everyone, but what are you endlessly curious about?
I actually love this question, so I'm sure I can see why you love it. I'm endlessly curious about the things, the matrices, the things that run us as beings and the planet and the cohesiveness of energy and, you know, how it all is made up and controlled by us. Hmm. So a little bit of a deeper answer probably than working from home, but definitely.
Yeah. So when you say energy, are you thinking about, like, you know, power plants and transmission lines, or are you thinking on the metaphysical sense?
So that's actually a perfect chance for me to actually handle something that is maybe unknown to some, but actual electricity and energy that one would consider spiritual energy follows very similar characteristics and flows, like emotion and the flow of electricity is actually very similar if you were to analyze it. And that's what fascinates me, is just how in depth and how alike electricity is to the maybe metaphysical energy is what you would call it, but it is measurable on a device. And it's very interesting. I mean, almost all things follow these flows, you would call them, or patterns of energy or patterns of flow and, you know, hold up. And there's lots of different ways, just like a wavelength, right? What's happening from node to node is the characteristic of that energy itself. Sound being similar. Yeah. As we're watching our wavelengths on the on the screen here.
That's right. Wow, that's incredible. Like, how did this interest in energy come into play for you?
You know, a long time ago, I started on a journey of doing anything I could to enhance myself. And I tried everything. I did, like, you know, float tanks and meditation, I think, which most people go into. And just reading, and tried self-hypnosis, which was totally a disaster. Self-hypnosis is rough, because there's just, like, you're playing with things that you got to understand. But long story short, I really started digging in, and I didn't have a lot of good perception on, you know, certain things, like, you know, the Bible and things like that. I think it was crammed down my throat as a kid. And then I kind of rebelled and was like, I'm not doing this, and, you know, all this other stuff. But long story short, I just had this obsession with, like, doing anything I could do to be the best I could be. I say positive because, you know, I guess it's definitely not, you know, every minute thing, but, you know, just getting healthy habits. And that was just the hobby. I mean, I'm a professional student, and one would say it could be a teacher as well, but I became a student of the things that work, that I could prove to myself that are working. right? So like you can read a book about these things and you could hear me talk about it. But if you don't actually go find something that you could put into practice and prove for yourself, then it's kind of pointless. You're just, it's like, why read a biography about a guy who made $1 billion if you're not actually going to put into that into effect and prove that he's actually telling the truth? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that led me down this huge journey. And I went on this very long spiritual journey of discovery, self-discovery, and, you know, covered many subjects. But in a nutshell, without going like too deep into it, that's that's been basically the route. And I would say, if you asked me 5 years ago if I'd be studying quantum physics or you know, certain amounts of science, I would have laughed so hard at you. But now I'm having, you know, a lot of understanding where these, you know, even like, you know, atoms and nuclei and protons and neutrons and these and just all how it works is actually way more simple than I think it's, I perceived it personally. And so I have to say, though, when it talks about splitting atoms and like nuclei, which is the center of an atom, or like a proton, which is, you know, and I could make people fall asleep here, but it actually is quite simple. It just takes some confront, you know, some facing in order for you to be like, oh, this isn't that complicated anymore. You know, because I think we just think of like rocket scientists, right? When we think about these. So anyway, without making everybody fall asleep, whoever listens to this, or you, we'll just leave it at that.
That's so fascinating. When you're on this journey of understanding, this deep understanding, being a professional student, is this at the same time that you started your entrepreneurial journey?
Actually, I was in my entrepreneurial journey probably, you know, I was in a similar place. I think I had about halfway in at that time. I think I was probably 7 years in, maybe 7.5 years in, and had made a lot of different mistakes. But I was definitely soaking up education, had a lot of different people that I knew. I'm sure you've heard of Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a lot of friends that were Masons and, you know, had invited me to kind of, you know, see what that was like, and didn't necessarily end up going that direction, but became quite fascinated with, you know, the hidden language inside of language and a lot of different things that were, you know, on the surface. And I've studied a lot of different things, you know, Hinduism, Taoism, Buddhism, Christianity, the Vedic hymns. I mean, you name it. I've taken from things, and I've found that, It goes hand in hand, actually. Success, happiness, and success don't always go together, right? And I think a lot of people look at a really wealthy person and say, he's probably not happy or she's probably not happy. And that's true. And so I was obsessed with like, well, I want to be happy. I don't care about this. And in that, I started using the tools I was learning to, you know, help myself become successful. So it definitely is a big part, actually biggest part of why I wrote this book, was because of where I was at that time.
So at that midway point, when you discover this new trajectory, like what kind of impact did that have on your entrepreneurial journey at that point?
Well, in the beginning, it was the biggest shakeup in existence, because I had to face everything that I had done wrong in order to understand what I was doing right at the fullest point of reality. Because, you know, you hear about somebody who goes through life, or you know, and then all of a sudden snaps one day, or you see like the homeless man on the street talking to the wall, or you see the person who ends up in a loony bin and you're like, they're crazy, right? Because they're hallucinating. You see somebody takes drugs and they're like hallucinating, right? On purpose. But we don't really talk about how we alter the meaning of things in order to make us feel better in the smallest ways, which actually make the biggest impact. So I had to kind of face a lot of these things and get real with myself a lot in order to get there. You know what I mean? So it really, really altered, you know, my stability, because there were some things that I had kind of altered in order, you know, justifications, little things we do here and there. And again, that's why I wrote this, was because I realized how much damage was done during my journey of having really a lot of freedom, which is what we have when we work from home.
Yes.
And how much more I could actually damage the things in my life that I cared about or thought I cared about, but maybe didn't. Now, luckily, I didn't make the mistakes all that I talk about, but I did make a lot. And I saw so many other gentlemen and women that were going through this worse and actually causing more damage. And so that's essentially, I had finished this very high level of awareness, you could call it, for many years doing things that just, you know, you do on a regimen basis, and realized that the biggest damage was not paying attention and not knowing, you know, not paying attention to what I was doing when I was doing it to the fullest degree that I could. Mm-hmm. And then really just not knowing that there was another way, there was a different way to do it, or there was a way that you could just slightly get there. And I called it slacking off specifically because I made the most money in the shortest amount of time, knowing when to slack off. But I started just slacking off, wasting time, wasting money, getting away with it. And then because I had many roles where I could just literally make all I needed for the month or the you know, 2 months in like one day. Wow. So then the rest of the month was do whatever you want. Well, today I would take that day 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 30, and I would work the next month and the next month and the next month. And then, you know, if I could handle the whole 2 years in 1 month, which would have been the best thing to do, but I didn't do that then. So that, you know, has a lot to do with the evolution of myself. I mean, this is, hey, don't just learn from my successes. This is a book based on learn from my failures. Mm-hmm. Don't learn from my successes, because everybody talks about success and it's, mm-hmm. it's different for everybody. Learn from my failures. Right. Cause that's, I think inherently we do that anyway. Like Natch, some of us look at other people like, I don't want to run into the wall at 100 miles an hour. Right. Like simple stuff like that.
So what were you doing as an entrepreneur, or what are you doing now? Is it the same thing?
No, actually. So I think when I initially had written the book, I had just left about a 7-8 year career with a company called Cox Enterprises, who owned a lot of different, you know, little mini corporations under them in automotive, like Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader and different things like that. And I was, you know, just a consultant that would consult dealers. And so technically I was an employee. And then I had like a marketing firm as well that I owned, and did some social media strategy, and then did some consulting for different businesses across the country as well. And so I was quite busy. Also, you know, single father as well, have two, you know, kids that are, one's almost 18, gosh, in like,
oh, wow,
5 days. And then it's just, you know, doing what I was trying to do to be the best I could be. And that's, I think in that time in my life, I was just trying to survive. Yeah. Right. It was all about survival. How can I push myself to the farthest possible point of success? I mean, like I was willing to, you know, you probably maybe heard or something similar where that guy who runs until he literally has no breath left, that was me. Mm-hmm. Right. I was like, if I can do it, I'm going to do it to the hardest possible point that I can do it. And today I actually still consult, but not as much. I work primarily in medical technology. I'm a VP of development for a medical technology company who created a home physical therapy device that enables people to do everything at home without a therapist. And obviously amongst the COVID era, it's like the most impactful technology that I've ever seen.
Wow.
And so basically in the middle of writing this book, I stopped writing it because this company called RomTech became more important than the book. And I definitely was trying to write the book to help people, but I thought, man, this is a technology that's going to help people, you know, do a lot of things, get better faster, you know, do a lot of different things to enhance their, you know, their outcomes after a surgery or after some sort of like a knee replacement or a hip replacement or, and it's actually so amazing how impacted a patient or a person is when they have something they can do that's guided, and doesn't necessarily, now keep in mind, this isn't like an exercise machine. This is like a machine that gets them, you know, to the point that they can actually walk around and use an exercise machine.
Okay.
But it does it without, you know, anything else, right? We're trying to help fight the narcotic, you know, epidemic and a lot of these different things. So long story short, that became my focus and I became determined to make that company successful. And I still work with them now. And then of course I'm working, you know, on the book to, you know, potentially I'm going to create some courses for individuals who want to go through like a workshop type of thing, because you know, the book is not in any way complicated. There's exercises and some people hate those, especially if they like slacking off.
Right.
But I wrote the book so that you could literally pick up any part of it and read it. And I learned that from a couple books that I really liked, because I am that guy. I was the guy who literally did the, you know, least amount for the most, right? So I tried to be professionally lazy, I call it, where you do the work up front so you can relax and chill later. Mm-hmm. And I think for some of us, it's a great thing, but a lot of people get so caught up in the part where they're slacking off to the point where it's affecting things. And, you know, honestly, I loved the game of like last minute, you know, it was the 11th hour before you had to submit something. And then all of a sudden, boom, you did it.
Yeah.
You know, as long as your bills weren't late and your projects were good, you were good. And I constantly played that game and didn't ever let deadlines pass. But very unlikely. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't figure out why. Like, how is that possible? So anyway, that's a part of, you know, I looked at the successes and failures and said, you know, I'd rather show people my failures so they can learn from them, create their own successes, and give them some successes along the lines.
I love this whole idea of slacking off too, because if there's anything that produces more guilt and shame in people, it's this idea that we're slackers, that we're slacking off, wasting time. And yet at the same time, everything that I've learned about creativity is that we can't have those creative sparks and insights without slacking off and letting our brain just do something else.
It's so, so 100% important to slack off. It's really something that, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Creativity is who we really are. Before we had a job, before we paid bills, before we cared about the things that we care about today to keep us surviving, we were creative. That's all we did was slack off. And there's nothing wrong with putting your nose to the grindstone and having a good time, right? The last thing anybody should be doing is be so serious that they're rigid and just, you know, not enjoying themselves. And that right there is a big deal. First things first, you have to create slack off time for yourself. You have to. If you don't, you're actually, in my opinion, and I don't care who disagrees with me and I'm happy to listen to it. In my opinion, you're not really giving the best of yourself to yourself or others around you. And that's a big deal because if you realize, if you're a doctor, and I say this because I talk to so many doctors nowadays, if you're a doctor and you're not the best doctor, you might have not saved a life. Mm-hmm. If you're a firefighter and you didn't kick that one door down because you just didn't give it that oomph, or you kicked it but it didn't close, but then you left and you realized you could have kicked it a little harder and you didn't, and somebody died in that fire, now this is totally extreme, obviously, and I'm doing that on purpose, and I hope you guys feel it. I hope anybody who listens feels it, but my point is that you really owe it to yourself to make time for yourself, and that's something that I've had to deal with as an entrepreneur more than anything, because it's like, this is for me. Right? This is for me. Working is for me. Right? Trying to make money is for me. But money is the lowest form of motivation.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously, you know, not what rules someone, at least I'd say that's happy. I mean, it's a part of it, but it's definitely not it. So anyway, that's, you know, the part that makes sense. And then of course, just recognizing when slacking off is actually harmful versus helpful, because I'm the guy who shoots from the hip, man. I'm the guy that goes and gets a greeting card the last minute and then picks one and then gives it to the person. And they're like, this is the best greeting card ever. So I've been successful at this, right? And that's why essentially I've kind of created this, is because I want to appeal to the lazy person in all of us. It's actually not the lazy person. It's actually the most creative person, because we will creatively find ways to be lazy, won't we?
Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah.
I just want to emphasize something that you just said too, that kind of blew my mind, is that, you know, you work for you. You live life for you. And it's just like, if there's like that hierarchy of understanding, it's like oftentimes I feel like as a society, we invert that to our detriment, where it's like, we do all of these things for someone else, because if you do them for you, you're egotistical or narcissistic.
I'm actually really glad that you said that. That's something that, you know, I call it psychobabble, right? When somebody, you know, puts a label on somebody who loves themselves. You know, I grew up in a religion, I won't name names, that was very much against self-love in this way. Mm. As a matter of fact, self-love didn't even exist. Mm-hmm. And I rebelled against the idea, not of the actual core beliefs of it, but of the force, like do this or you go to hell, or do this or this happens. And then the no explanation as to why, and the no self-love, you know, like give to others so much that you lose yourself is something that they don't talk about. Mm-hmm. But I think there's obviously, just like anything, there's a balance. You should be so good inside yourself and you know, outside yourself, you should be so good that you can give to others. I think that's mm-hmm. the lesson that's missing in mm-hmm. the advice, is yeah. that you need to be so good that you can give to others. And that goes right back circling mm-hmm. to being the best you can be, right? Being the best doctor, the firefighter, work from home person, father, you know, mother, you know, whatever it is you are, but being the so good that you can give your absolute best to another person when they need it is the lesson, yeah. you know, and that includes some self-love, you know, be, you know, definitely push yourself, but take it easy. You know, and I get told that. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine who's one of the most amazing, biggest beings on earth right now, just last night was reminding me of this, you know, and it's just, it's something that obviously we, maybe not all of us, but some of us, especially those who push ourselves, aren't very good at, right? To give ourselves a little bit of a break, just a little one. You know, let's take a break and do what we need to do. Hence, again, slacking off.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you for that. Just awareness, because I love that distinction of the importance of self-love and the value of that. And I think that when it comes to slacking off, that connects well to this idea of slacking off for fun. But something else blew my mind is that it's possible to slack off for profit. I mean, my mind just kind of like exploded thinking that, you mean I can make money slacking off? What?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I believe there was a brand awareness brand creator that I met. And forgive me for not mentioning names, just because I didn't get permission. But a guy who creates brands for, you know, Disney and big companies, creates brand new ideas, mm-hmm. had mentioned to me that he moved recently in the country in Northern California. And in his house, he's got this backyard off of his patio that's completely full. And just for miles, you just see all these beautiful trees, the top of trees. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how he invited his clients to his house, because it's his creative space. And that's, you know, this guy's a genius. And he was explaining that his success came from his, you know, self-love or ability to detach from his body and use his mind in such a way that was just all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, all over the place, like his scenery, And that's why, you know, when we go outside, sometimes we feel more happy probably, but ultimately it goes to the point where you are your best you, and you can make the most money if you are your best you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why most of us strive to be better and read. And, you know, I'm sure you read, I'm sure you do things to be better. You're trying to be the best you can be. But if you knew that if you read 1 hour a day, or you slacked off 1 hour a day every day, right? Whatever that slacking off is to you, that you'd make $1 million in 5 years, you knew it for a fact. There's not a person on earth that wouldn't do that if they wanted $1 million, right? Absolutely. If somebody wanted a farm animals by doing it, they would do it. You know, whatever it is you want, right? But the point is that we play so much in the maybe, mm-hmm. that we don't necessarily focus on what we actually know that we've already proven to ourselves, right? And these are just some of the things I've proven to myself. And then, of course, get reasonable about what I've already proved to myself to make the game fun, you know?
Right. Okay, I just love the idea that you called reading slacking off, because, you know, reading is something that I love to do. So, hey, I've got a PhD in slacking off.
Well, you know, it's good to be. Some of the greatest people know when to slack off and know when not to. I think Steve Jobs might be one of them. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, look at Elon Musk. Elon Musk definitely is not a slacker, mm-hmm. right? He works, you know, I think at one point I heard like 80, 100 hours a week, nonstop. But you bet your ass he's got slacking off time. Mm-hmm. He definitely does. And what he considers maybe, right? But he definitely did it, and he was in it. Did you see him, you know, looking at his phone? I mean, I didn't look at it, so I can't say, but I'm pretty sure he was pretty focused and involved and had a good conversation, and he was just basking in the experience. And his ability to do that probably has to do with his ability to stay focused, and he maybe considers work as his slacking off time, mm-hmm. right? And so we can really make anything we want it to be. For me, I can work 10, 15 hours a day and literally not feel overworked, you know, because I'm enjoying it and I'm choosing it. And then I know what my slacking off time is. Mm-hmm. For me, it could be the gym, it could be reading. I try to read every single day, listen to something every single day that, you know, will make me have an aha moment. And I think that for me is my slacking off. And I took me a long time actually to realize that reading and aha moments were the enjoyment, you know, and that's really, for me, that's what it is.
Oh, for sure. What another brilliant aha moment too, this idea that slacking off is defined by you, not what other people think you should be or should not be doing.
Yeah, because ultimately we grow up with these given meanings of things, mm-hmm. by others, and we accept them. And maybe we don't need to change it, but we're creators. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to create what things mean to us, right? Mm-hmm. What a Kit Kat candy bar means one thing to me, it means something totally different to you. But if we were doing what the advertisement said, then it would mean taking a break. Right? Hopefully they sponsor this podcast.
Exactly.
But that's the point, you know, it's like we get bombarded with forced meaning, mm-hmm. I think every day, from others, from commercials, from different things, from work, from people, just all over the place. It's very important for us to maintain what things mean for us, right? And I think that's just a great point, right? Slacking off means what it means to you and you only.
I'm reminded of a story from a few years ago when my dad had retired from his 30-year job.
Wow.
And he was trying to do some work from home stuff during the summertime for another gig that he had. And he called me one day because he knew I'd worked from home for, at that point, probably 10 years. And he goes, "Man, how do you do it? How do you work from home and not get sucked into TV?" And I just started laughing. I'm just like, you know, you don't really pay the bills if you're watching TV all day long. So, but it's right. Just like, I also knew when I could watch TV. And so it for me, it wasn't that all TV is bad or no TV is good. It was just like, I knew when my slack off time should be for me.
That's beautiful. And that's honestly, most people right now in across the world that are working from home that just started doing it a year ago, exactly. they're going to be in the same place, right? They're going to know their lines that they won't cross because they're in the beginning. It's the people that go in 2, 3, 4 years that now have a lot to do mm-hmm. besides work at home because they know they work from home. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that start to let those lines bleed a little bit on just, okay, I can catch this episode of Netflix at 3 and then at 4. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, my meeting's canceled randomly and I had nothing to do with it. And maybe they didn't. But the point that I'm trying to make is like what you put your attention on is it becomes more important in your world. So, you know, having a defined line for yourself is actually more important for you than it is for the other people involved, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It does make me think about this idea too of what we bring into our work from home expectations in terms of like, okay, we have a 9-to-5 job for a lot of our early career, and then we use that to shape that work from home experience as opposed to understanding, okay, you know, I actually work best 12-to-3, and then, you know, really scheduling our days in a way that is maximum for us as opposed to maximum to some job or organization.
Right. That's a big, big part of, you know, the part I actually wanted to emphasize more on this in the part where I'm talking about no, right?
Yeah.
But there's this negative undertone or meaning that kind of sometimes gets pushed with saying no as like this, you're stopping things mm-hmm. from happening. You know, like there's a whole movie dedicated to yes, right? Mm-hmm. Called Yes Man, right? With Jim Carrey. Mm-hmm. And I love that movie. And so I had such a conflict putting this because it's kind of contradictory when it comes out of context. But it's true. At the end of every day, work or not, how you structure it mm-hmm. and how you do it should be based around you.
Yeah.
Because you can be the best. Like, you know, I explained many, many of the failures, right? Not eating properly. You know, I mean, there are proven studies out there that prove when someone doesn't have a certain nutrition, that a whole part of the way that they operate and function as a person completely goes to the lowest point of you know, use or production. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, when they don't have vitamin C, lose their teeth. Some people, you know, have a lowered immune system. Some people, you know, don't. When that certain vitamins aren't mixed with other vitamins. Anyway, long story short, it's a big, big part to make sure that you're covering the things that you need to function at the best. Like I would never do a meeting mm-hmm. with someone in a certain environment. And not because I couldn't do it, but because it would water down the way somebody receives what I would be able to present or talk about. Mm-hmm. Like I have, you know, it's just like anything. A performer has a stage and that stage mm-hmm. needs to be set up with perfect lighting and perfect sound and all these other things. And when that is done, they're great. I actually love the movie with Adam Sandler and I think it was The Weeknd. And it was one of those really gritty movies. I don't know if you've seen it or not. And it was, long story short, without going into it, and I'll mention it once I find it, but one of the biggest parts of the movie is The Weeknd. You know who The Weeknd is?
The musician, right?
Yeah, the musician, right.
Yeah.
The Weeknd is about to perform and he's looking around in like this black room. It's called Uncut Gems is the name of the movie.
Okay,
in this room with a black light and it's like a club and he's sitting there and he looks around and he's refusing to perform. He's refusing to perform because of some lighting or something in the room wasn't exactly how he pictured it in his mind. Mm-hmm. And for him, in order for him to be the best he can be, he had to have it a certain way. And some people will look at that and be like, why is he being ridiculous? Just go with the flow.
Right.
Right. And that's true. Sometimes you should. Sometimes in order to have a good time, it doesn't really matter. Certain things don't matter. But for him, it mattered that the lighting was a certain way because he had to duplicate what he already created, right, in his mind. And so it's a big, big deal. And that's something that professionals, what I've noticed over the years, is that the more intricate you are, and some of us too, like crazy proportions, that the more professional you can be. And I love looking at somebody who's in complete disarray and like totally up in arms, and they're like, they are borderline crazy with this energy and this obsession, and turning them into something that's like massively productive. Mm. And a side note on that, I had everybody's gotten the call from the people in other countries trying to get them to give them money, right?
Yeah.
Well, one time I had a guy who had texted me over and over and over again and established this relationship of like almost like friendship over the course of like weeks, all to ask me to send some guy money in Africa somewhere. Mm. And I was so astonished, being a communicator myself, how good the communication was. Mm-hmm. I was so astonished, and I said, listen to me. I was like, you don't want to do this. I was like, you're doing this because you're afraid or you think that this is fun. But I was like, you're so professional. You have such a great skill. You're creative. You're an artist. Mm. I was like, why wouldn't you use this to make your own money the right way? Mm. And the guy like is texting me like, I can't believe this. And I kind of like randomly guessed that he was in some part of Africa. And I really had never even looked into it. And he was like, how did you know that? And he's like, I've been struggling and da 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 da. Anyway, long story short, I like to believe that he moved in the right direction. But that's my point about taking somebody who's having, complete up in arms disarray, scattered, maybe doing things to a poor way, like slacking off. That's affecting your life negatively more and more and more and more every day because you don't have a balance. It's actually all energy, whether it's you're putting it into time or you're putting it into action, it's all energy. And however you use it can either start to affect you, right? Where it bounces back and hurts you in some way, right? Whether it's for your money or your time or whatever. Or it can actually create beautiful things with other people around you. And that's all I want. I just want people to be able to create their day, create their time, and make sure that they're, being the best they can actually be, as cliche as it sounds.
As cliched as that does sound, it is important though, because I don't think we think enough about our day in terms of how it's structured. And I love what you just said about the stage. I mean, thinking of our life as a stage in which we're performing on is mind-blowing.
I mean, it is, right? This is what's mind-blowing? What's mind-blowing is your mind is the stage. Ooh. And you get to decide whatever that stage has. You want it to have the biggest, baddest lights, the best furniture, the best whatever it is, you get to. Right. Mm-hmm. And all you're really doing is performing. This whole life is a big performance. Yeah. And at the end of the day, making sure that you can be the best performer you can be by sharpening your mind, in my opinion, your spirit, your body, if you want to, make sure that you're healthy and nutritioned and all that good stuff, that these are all are things that are massively, massively important. Now, and I have nothing against somebody who lives a lifestyle that's not, I've come a long way to understand that everybody's on their own journey.
Right.
But that's just, that's why I'm here. I'm here to help people in that way.
And I think you've mentioned this earlier, but I think one of the powerful tools of high-end performers is the ability to know when to say no.
Yes.
And this is definitely something that I've struggled with, that most creatives that I talk with and work with struggle with as well. And so how can we learn to say and use our no's powerfully without the meaning and the fear and those negative stories that we often attribute to no?
You know, I was going to put a really big exercise in the book that I didn't, because this could have a little bit of a negative effect on people. But I'll give a light version of it. There's a book out there called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, I think his name is.
Yes.
He talks about a bad deal being worse, right, mm-hmm. than no deal, right? So a bad deal is worse than no deal. And I love that saying, because in sales, in negotiations, you are told that a deal is better than no deal. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it typically is true. However, there is such a thing as a bad deal.
Yeah.
Right? So just remember, like, when you have a packed day and you're busy, if you're busy, that there are things that you can say no to. And there are things you can put off that aren't necessary right now. Doesn't mean everything. I'm a firm believer in whatever comes your way, you handle it right there and then, no matter what, if you can.
Yeah.
But this is where it all gets messed up. No one has established the priority of those things, because they are just surviving. They're not looking at, when these things come my way, what will I do? It's really not that complicated. That's actually why I put the exercise. That's one of the last exercises in the book, is it teaches you how to schedule out your personal stuff, then your business stuff, and actually prioritize things in a way that for you makes certain things a priority or not. Now, some people may not ever do that exercise, because it's hard. It was hard for me to even write it. But when I actually did it, I realized, if someone does that exercise right there, that's mm-hmm. something that they are not doing. And every person who's ever done that exercise, from the most busy person I've ever known to the least busy person I've known, has said that they've gained time from it. And that's what mm-hmm. also this book provides, is it gives somebody time, which is something that most things will never give.
Right.
I'm trying to give people back something that they lose, whether they know it or care or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Thank you for that. I don't know if anyone says that very often to you, but thank you for the gift of time.
Well, thank you. Thanks for definitely, you know, listening and being willing to look in. I think that's, you know, it's an important part for all of us. And another thing too, you know, I take the advice I give. Every time I start to slack off too much, I look at my book and I realize that I have a responsibility, a duty, if you will, to ensure that I'm following the advice that I'm giving. And that's a big lesson for me, is like, every time I'm about to give somebody advice, I literally ask myself, am I following this advice? And I take it if I'm not. Sometimes we have the greatest advice in the world, but we're not actually following it. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Mike, I'm curious about something. As you're kind of talking about, you know, writing this book, living your life, I'm reminded of a quote that I recently discovered on making its way on social media, and it's attributed to Stephen Pressfield, who wrote The War of Art, mm-hmm. and he kind of attributes writing as an act of self-discovery, not an act of self-expression. And I'm curious what you discovered about yourself as you wrote Slacking Off.
I discovered that this is probably the worst thing for somebody to say publicly. I discovered I'm a lot smarter than I thought I was. And I also discovered that there was a method to the madness. And that my ability to slack off, and the intricate way that I will go, the length that I will go to make something complicated just to get my own slacking off time, was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen in my life. And then when I started looking around me and looking at the lengths that others will go to get that slacking off time, it was incredible. Not only was it incredible, but the amount I would disillusion myself from saying that this was slacking off time was the most incredible thing of it all, right? Because being on social media during work or looking at something that you want to buy during work really isn't a big deal, but it is to you. See, that's what's crazy about the whole thing is that it's actually not your parents or your boss or, you know, God or whatever you want to believe is causing you guilt that causes you guilt. It's you. And at the end of the day, the reason that we go and outspend our money and we win and then we lose and we win and we lose is because of you, because you believe somewhere deep down or out there, or however you want to put it, that it wasn't right, or you're trying to fulfill some sort of need, right? And that need, as I lay it out in this book, is the need to slack off, right? Like the reason you go on Facebook, the reason is because you're actually slacking off, and there's reasons behind that, but ultimately, understanding what yours are is the first step. Understand what you do to slack off. Has anybody ever asked you, do you have a hobby?
Mm-hmm.
And how many times do you have an answer that's like really readily available today?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Sometimes, not very often.
Right. Same thing happens to me. People ask me this. I had to think about it. But all I did was look at my slacking off, right? And look at what I did when I, you know, committed to what slacking off is for me. Mm-hmm. As a part of the exercise, and realize that I have a lot of hobbies, and that's whatever I do on my slacking off time is my hobby, right? Yes. Reading, understanding, writing, working out, you know, learning is slacking off. And I think, you know, like you said, you like to read. Some people hate reading because they didn't get a good, whatever their reasons, but the point that is like you really do should establish that. And that's such a great thing. But anyway, that's a long answer to your very good question. So hopefully you got what the answer was there.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Well, Mike, this has been such an awesome conversation. Thank you just for sharing all that you've shared. You've shared a lot of resources and books already, but is there one book in particular right now that's blowing your mind?
I'd say there is a book that's blowing my mind on a daily basis. Unfortunately, it's not such a public book that I can just state it. But what I'll tell you is, there are many things out there, I think, about like this, about like energy and quantum physics and things like that that exist. I think ultimately some of the things inside of like, you know, Hinduism, Taoism, Buddhism, I think the parts of some of these things are fascinating. I don't think that when you read something, you should automatically assume it to be true. And so I think like a lot of these newer books that come out, like Never Split the Difference, a great one. If I were to go into one, that really is a great book that I could read over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think, I'll just say this. I am still reading The Great Conversation, which is a series of 50 books, and it's 100 years of knowledge that teach people how to look at one idea, whether it's physics or math or literature or society or politics, and then it introduces a counter idea to teach the person reading to critically think, to think on their own. And I think if I were to give anybody something that still blows my mind to this day, because I haven't finished it, is that series of books is amazing if somebody has the motivation and the ability to dedicate themselves to a big idea like that. I'm a big thinker, so obviously it's a little different for me. And then, you know, I think all in all, there's a book that's really fascinating. I think it was called Reluctant Messiah. Is the name of the book. That book blew my mind because there's a lot of truth to that book. I think a lot of people, you know, go through, and I think the guy who wrote that book, his name's Richard Bach. And the other one, actually, correction, it's called Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. Man, oh, wow. That book just will, that literally will blow your mind. That will blow your mind. Other than that, you should definitely buy Slacking Off because, you know, it's a part of why we're here. But definitely that book is an amazing book and it's an easy read, but it will blow your mind. Nice. It will definitely blow your mind for sure.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk with you today. I've learned so much, and just thank you for everything that you do and for giving us all the permission to know how we slack off and do it.
Thank you so much, Chris. It was a pleasure to be here. It was great talking to you.
The irony is not lost on me that while editing this episode, I really struggled with the desire to slack off. So the episode took a little longer than normal, but here we are. I really want to reemphasize something that Mike said in this conversation, and that's the importance of structuring your day according to how you work, the work you do, and really how you want to live your life. It's so important. So take that time to really identify what matters to you and do it. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.